what is the value of a little bit of materials lost as compared to the value of access? Interrogate your library card sign-up policies. What can you do better? Who is being left out? Who is being made to feel unwelcome? Why can't things change? And ask those questions until you receive a satisfactory answer.
Welcome to FYI, the Public Libraries Podcast. I'm Kathleen Hughes with the Public Library Association. Today we are talking about a recent study conducted by the Brooklyn Public Library on public library cardholder sign-up practices. Our guest today is Amy Michael, Director of Customer Experience at the Brooklyn Public Library. Welcome, Amy.
Thanks so much for having me.
I think it was the Books Unbanned initiative that led BPL to conduct the cardholder sign-up practices study. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I'll start by talking a little bit about that project first. So Books Unbanned is a Freedom to Read initiative launched by Brooklyn Public Library about 2 years ago during National Library Week in April 2022. The program allows for any young person ages 13 to 21 anywhere in the U.S. to apply for a BPL e-card and then get access to our entire digital collection of over 500,000 ebooks and audiobooks and over 100 databases.
And that card is good for 1 year and can be renewed as long as that person is still eligible. We launched that program specifically to support young adults, as many of the challenges to reading materials that we've seen in recent years, of course, have been targeting young adult titles. And through Books Unbanned, we've also launched a lot of new programming and support to help teens and young adults become more engaged with these decisions being made on their behalf and speak up for their right to read. So in a nutshell, that's Books Unbanned. We're very proud of it. It's gotten a lot of attention, and there are now a total of 5 libraries that are part of the Books Unbanned Coalition: Seattle Public Library, Boston, San Diego Public, and LA County.
That's great. You mentioned that you've developed some other initiatives related, and I'd love to hear more about that if you wanted to talk about that for a few minutes.
Of course. Thank you for asking. So a lot of the attention around Books Unbanned has been around the digital library card, but I always take the opportunity, if I can, to remind people that there's this whole other half of the program, which centers around teen education and support. So when we launched Books Unbanned in April 2022, we also launched monthly virtual meetups for young people across the country. And when young people were signing up for the library card, we send them a welcome email and make sure they knew about some of the resources and support available to them. So that included our virtual teen meetups, our BookMatch Teen Readers Advisory Service. So it's reading recommendations by teens for teens. So helping young readers to know that they're supported in whatever they want to read, and they have a resource to find more of those kinds of books. And then it took us a little while, but starting in February 2023, we had a partnership with PEN America that resulted in a 4-week virtual Freedom to Read Institute for high school students across the country who could join and learn more about what the First Amendment is, what are their rights, how some of these policies and procedures get decided on their behalf in schools or in libraries, and how they could begin learning more and inserting themselves into these decisions and speaking up on their own behalf. In the course of that 4-week session, we did some more traditional lecturing about some of those topics, but then we also brought in peer leaders, teens across the country who've had some success using their voice to make change and allowing the Institute attendees to learn from them and ask questions and talk to them just very casually and stand back whenever possible and make a lot of space for the young people to connect with one another and help one another identify what their strengths are, what they need help with. And in some cases, some young people just had no idea that what was being shared in the media was actually happening to some of their colleagues across the country. So it's really about education, helping to give teens information, creating opportunities for them to connect with one another, and then learning from the teens themselves, what do you need and how can we support you? And most often what they tell us is, I don't know what to do and I don't know how to do it. So it's really about getting them hooked up with some trusted adults to help them navigate these procedures and then help to build confidence and create empowerment so they can advocate for themselves in a variety of different ways.
Who are the teens? What are you seeing?
Within a few months of launching the program, we saw that we were getting signups from every single state in the country. We've issued thousands of library cards In the first year of the program, we saw a little over 100,000 checkouts. Wow. And we're pretty much on track to see another year of a little over 100,000 checkouts.
How did the Books on Band project inspire the library to embark on the cardholder signup practices study?
The cardholder access research is an effort that Brooklyn Public Library is spearheading to look at and learn how public libraries nationwide are structuring their cardholder signup policies and practices. So what is the established practice across the field, specifically in public libraries? Why are things being done a certain way? How often is these practices being challenged? How often are they being interrogated? And where could we all collectively benefit from a little bit more clarity, a little bit more guidance, specifically in this one area of practice? So this project really did come about through Books on Band, even if a little bit indirectly. In my role at Brooklyn Public Library, I was taking a second look at our own library card signup policies, specifically in the climate that we're in right now, a climate of growing misinformation, a climate where access to our libraries is being challenged and in some cases is becoming more restricted. So I wanted to make sure that Brooklyn Public Library was doing everything it possibly could to make sure our collections and our resources were as accessible as possible. So I was going out, I was talking to libraries, I was trying to figure out what were those best practices, what should I be referring to when restructuring my own library's policies and procedures around library card signup. But then at the same time, Brooklyn Public Library had been receiving hundreds and hundreds of testimonials from young people who were signing up for our Books on Band library cards. And one of the things that really struck me personally was how many young people were not just sharing stories about censorship, but simply sharing stories about how they struggled to access books at all where they lived for a variety of reasons. And a lot of times those reasons compound on top of one another and create a situation where a young person has very limited access to books at all. And that's just as concerning, if not even more concerning, than attempts to censor reading material on a title by title basis. In my decision to stand up and say, look, I think that we need to do some research and some reflection on library card signup practices in general in our field in the United States. And so Brooklyn Public Library decided to step up and do that work. This is about access to our resources and about taking a second look at who might be left out.
So what are the primary objectives of this study?
It's to collect what public library cardholder signup policies and practices are and reflect this information back to the field, just as a baseline and a reference. When we were doing this work, we also attempted to collect the rationale used for how libraries either establish or try to change, or in some cases, protect those policies. So what are we doing and why are we doing it? This first half of the project was the data collection. So that research was completed by late 2023. We've collected data from almost 2,000 libraries across the country, and that was done through an online survey as well as a few focus groups. And we're about ready to publish a report summarizing our findings and that report, as well as the raw data that we've collected. So we'll be making that available by request. And that information, that report, that raw data will be ready in April. And the second part of the work then is to convene a group of public library leaders that's really representative of the field, sit down, take a look at what we've learned from the research, and try to develop a framework, some guiding principles, some best practices for cardholder registration. And we want that framework to be anchored in our professional values, namely equity, intellectual freedom, and access. So we're going to be doing that work this summer, and we hope to have that framework published later this year.
At this point, are you able to share any key findings or insights you've gathered?
Most libraries require adult patrons to prove they are eligible for a library card. And the way most libraries do that is commonly by asking for photo ID and proof of residency. So residency is really the bar for patrons to clear to be eligible for a library card for that library. And then most libraries have both formal and informal processes in place to serve patrons who either don't meet or cannot prove that they meet those requirements. And that frequently shows up as patrons who are unhoused or patrons who work or go to school in the library's area, but don't also live there, or patrons residing in other kind of transitional housing, or patrons who own property but don't live there, and people who maybe live in the library's area temporarily. They're seasonal residents or they're seasonal workers. About 3/4 of the libraries represented in our research require adults to show that proof of eligibility. Of that batch of libraries asking for proof, about 1 in 5 often make exceptions. What's further interesting is that of the libraries represented, about 1 in 10, they ask about eligibility, but they don't ask for proof. And another 1 in 10 do not ask or require any information about residency or eligibility. About 1 in 5 libraries represented in our research state they have a probation period. Patrons have to clear some sort of probationary period in terms of the number of materials they can check out, for example, before they can graduate to a more standard library card. 4 out of 5 libraries do not require patrons to have a library card to access computer or printing services. More than 1/3 of libraries allow patrons to apply for a library card online, but then the patron must visit the library in person to receive a card. More than 2 in 5 libraries require patrons to apply in person. More than 3 in 5 libraries only offer library card signup information in English. About 7 in 10 offer that introductory information, but only in English. About 85% of libraries represented require children or teenagers up to a certain age to have permission from an adult to get a library card. And of those libraries, about 1/2 of them, the adult permission is needed up to the age of 18. About 2/3 of the libraries represented in our research, children or teenagers, they receive a library card, and that library card does not have any limitations on what they can check out based on their age. However, there are some libraries, about 1 in 5, that issue library cards, and that card carries limitations on access based on age. And the most common way that shows up is the type of items that can be checked out, the number of items that can be checked out. About 9 in 10 libraries require a mailing address in all cases. But interestingly, about 1 in 5 libraries don't collect this information. So they ask for it, but they don't collect it as part of the patron's record.
So patrons without mailing addresses, is that addressed in the study?
Yes. When we published the findings of the research, there's quite lengthy analysis, and I'm trying to give some of the highlights, but the idea is that people who are interested can really go in depth into every single question asked and understand the breakdown of how libraries responded to that question. And we will also provide the survey questions as a reference, so you can see how the questions were asked and how we structured collecting it. Many libraries did indicate that they have made some kind of change to their cardholder signup policy or practice in the past 5 years. More than 1/2 of the time, those changes were prompted by library staff. So it's wonderful to see that library staff who are working with patrons every day are able to create change in their own library's practice around library card signup. But 3 in 10 of libraries have not made any changes to their cardholder signup policy or practice in the past 5 years. I will say that one common theme to tie it up is that what we saw in the research reflected over and over again was that many libraries are trying to reduce barriers to their resources and increase access at the same time, but they're trying to take many factors into consideration right at the same time.
And does the study ask why? Like, for what reason are they asking these questions, or
yes,
why they are requiring an ID? Or
when libraries were asked why they require parent or guardian signature or acknowledgement for a youth library card, there's a variety of reasons that they share. Some people say that because young people don't have ID, so the parent is there to kind of authenticate their identity. Some people share that the reason they ask for permission is to have the parent or guardian take on the responsibility of any lost items, because their interpretation of the law that the minor cannot enter into that contract or that agreement. Others have said, we ask for it because we're actually asking for permission. So we feel the parent should know what their child is checking out of the library. And some people say, you know, I don't know. I don't know why we do it this way.
Just always have.
Yeah.
Would you want to talk a little bit about the Fine Free movement and efforts to open up access through revisiting cardholder signup policies and the parallels?
So, of course, the Fine Free movement is something that is relatively new in public libraries. We started seeing this trending a lot more maybe the past 5 to 7 years or so. But, of course, this is also something that has been around for a while in other kinds of libraries, namely school libraries. And the concept is that you don't charge overdue fines for late materials, but that you just simply assess a replacement fee, and then that's cleared once the item comes back. In some cases, we know we won't get the money back. We might not get the materials back, but what's really important is we get those patrons back. So with the fine-free policies and how this relates to the cardholder sign-up work is that we want to structure the fine-free policy so it opens up library access, creates a welcoming place without at the same time creating an adverse impact on this shared community resource, and that's the library collection. So how do you find that middle ground? We want to give everybody access, but then put those reasonable checks and balances in place. We want the materials to come back so that they can continue to be used for the public good. So what happened in the Fine Free movement is that there has really been this collective shift in public libraries that we have begun to recognize that charging fines has the potential to disenfranchise individuals, keep families out who actually need the library the most. So we're protecting our materials at the expense of those who really need them.
Well, I really look forward to seeing the data and hearing the recommendations from the working group. But do you have any recommendations you can share at this point?
Interrogate your library card sign-up policies. What can you do better? Who is being left out? Who is being made to feel unwelcome? Why can't things change? And ask those questions until you receive a satisfactory answer. And the biggest question, again, in relation to the fine-free movement is, what is the value of a little bit of materials lost as compared to the value of access? In terms of more comprehensive recommendations, we are planning on convening that working group, as I mentioned, and having something published that's really grounded in practice, that's very flexible in application, and that has received some legal approval as well. So it really gives libraries a path forward who want to go back and take a second look about how they structure cardholder registration.
And did you want to share anything about the timeline?
Well, we will be doing that work this summer, and I encourage those interested to visit our website at bklynlib.org/library-study for more information about signing up for that working group. And we hope to have that framework published sometime this fall.
Thank you so much for joining us today, and we look forward to seeing some of the data and hearing the results from the working group.
There is a lot of data and information that we've collected, and my goal is to make it available and help to surface some of the key considerations for libraries.
That was Amy Michael, Brooklyn Public Library, sharing information on the library's public library cardholder sign-up study. Hear more great FYI podcasts at publiclibrariesonline.org. Thanks for listening.